everybody. I want to welcome you to the Kenosha Life Course Initiative. Hashtag Action is a community outreach plan established by the Kenosha Life Course Initiative for Healthy Families, collaborative to help navigate African-American women, fathers, and families through social determinants which affect infant mortality. My name is Atifa Robinson, and I'm the project coordinator for K-Life. Today we have with us
Josie Garwood. I'm the K-Life intern.
And Ari Owens, the founder of Ari Empowers.
Thank you guys for joining me on today for the podcast. Ari, can you go ahead and just give some background information about yourself?
Sure. So as I said, my name is Ari Owens, and I'm the founder of Ari Empowers, which is the empowerment agency. It was founded in November 2018. So I'm super excited to be with you all today. First of all, thanks for having me. And what I do in my empowerment agency is provide workshops, and I also do different like keynote speaking that really focuses on topics of mixed race identity, gender identity, and self-love. We also offer different writing support services because I have a background in English. So really helping youth to sharpen their writing skills and all things related to just writing and things like that. So yeah, youth empowerment, really focusing on race, gender, and self-love.
Tell me about your career path. What led to you specializing in mixed race identity, gender identity, and self-love?
Yeah, great question. So before I tell you about my career path, I'll share a little bit about just me personally, because my family has had a lot to do with my decision to focus on mixed race identity and the gender identity piece of it. So I'm Black biracial, my mom's white, my dad's Black, and I come from a really large blended multicultural family. There's people of all different races in my family, and so I think that really shaped how I viewed the world from a young age, is that constant exposure to people who look like me and don't look like me, and so that definitely is a huge part of it. But certainly my career path, which I'll get into now, is another big part of it. So I went to college and I studied journalism for a bit until I changed my major to English because I realized that I was more interested in the writing and the reading and the working with people. I thought I wanted to be an English teacher for a while as opposed to like just the journalism part of being on TV. Like I realized that wasn't for me. And so throughout college, pursuing that English degree and wanting to be an English teacher is when I really realized the importance of the writing aspect of it. But also my involvement in college as a student leader, joining different organizations and clubs, really made me hyper aware of my identity as a Black biracial person, and gender also became a big thing. So I will say a little bit more about that. So again, like coming from a big blended multicultural family, you know, being exposed to people of different races wasn't anything new to me. But it was interesting to be on a college campus and to like not be acknowledged as a person of color. Like people would make like strange comments to me about like, oh, it's so nice for you to come out and like support like, you know, the events in the Black community. And I'd be like, but wait, I am the Black community. So little things like that where I realized like, oh, like people around me, they have a very different view of race and my own identity than I have. And so that was interesting because I feel like it definitely shook my confidence a bit because up until arriving to college, you know, my family was very loving, again, very diverse. So I had all the confidence in the world. But then being exposed to, you know, real life, I guess, outside of my family and realizing that, you know, the way that I viewed myself and the confidence that I had wasn't always going to be seen or accepted by others. And so I really struggled with my identity a lot in college, my confidence and where I fit in and where I didn't fit in. And so that's what really made me feel compelled to like start an organization to help other people, whether that's mixed race people or not, just people who are struggling with confidence in women and girls and exploring what it means to be a woman and a girl are things that became really like important to me in college figuring that out. And so I thought it would be great to have, you know, support services, resources for people who are figuring out the same things and to catch them earlier than when they arrived to college. So that was really a huge component of it for me.
Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit more about the work you do? Like give us a specific walkthrough of a workshop or we kind of want to know like how you introduce these ideas like gender and race to younger groups.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I can talk about one time I visited like my old middle school, and they wanted me to talk, not necessarily about gender. They wanted me to talk more about like self-love and confidence, but I like to be really sneaky in everything that I do. Find a way to incorporate gender and race, because these things are always present, whether we're talking about them or not. Like, they exist and they're real. They're things that we can all see. It's just usually the elephant in the room. So when I'm doing a workshop, storytelling is a part of the department agency that's really important. So when I say storytelling, I mean, like, me being able to share my own story and also inviting participants to do the same. So I usually start off my workshops with, like, a story about me or a joke or something. And that's intentional. It's not just because I think I'm great and I tell the best stories, but it's to help the participants build trust with me, you know, because kids, students, like, they're going to be much more likely to be open to what I'm saying, to the things I'm trying to expose them to sharing back with me if I'm, like, sharing that piece of myself and being vulnerable right away. So I start everything with a story. I'll introduce myself, obviously, you know, say who I am, where I'm from, why I'm in front of them. And then after I kind of get into that story, I will usually include a picture if I have a PowerPoint of me when I was younger. So whether it's like an embarrassing picture of me when I was in middle school, you know, like that specific time when I was visiting my middle school, that was funny and that got people to laugh. And again, like, oh, this person is relatable. Like, she literally went to this school. Yeah. And she looks different now. Like, she looks confident. Like, not so much back then. You know, so it's just like that relatability aspect and also that trust building. And so sometimes I'll ask people to, you know, what do you notice about this picture? And I think back to a specific picture that I shared when I was visiting my middle school. And it was a picture of me when I was a cheerleader and I had straight hair. Well, because I straighten my hair. My hair is naturally curly. And they're like, well, your hair is different. And I'm like, well, what do you mean? And they're like, well, it's straight. And I'm like, okay. And so that gives me an opportunity to tell another story about how when I was in middle school, I straightened my hair a lot. Because, you know, I had a lot of white friends and that's how they wore their hair. That was considered pretty in, you know, the magazines that I was reading and the TV shows that I was watching. And so now I feel differently. I love my naturally curly hair. I've learned how to do it, which is a part of it. And I talk about now, sure, I can wear my hair straight sometimes, but I'm doing it because, you know, it's style and I like it, not because I feel like I have to do this to fit in. So I can get deep really quick with them. And again, like, I like it because they get quiet and they kind of see, like, oh, again, this is a person I can relate to who appears to be, like, really confident, but maybe they aren't so confident or they weren't always as confident. And so after the storytelling piece and, you know, delving a little deeper with them, I'll cover whatever content I was asked to cover. So if we're talking about self-love, you know, I'll give them some definitions, some textbook things, you know, because a little bit of this has to be, you know, academic and reputable. But again, I really prefer to, like, tell stories and see what they think. So, you know, what does it mean to have confidence? And, you know, just wait for them to answer. And so they'll say something, and they'll be like, well, what does that mean? What does that mean? And I always just push, and go deeper and ask why to really, one, for myself, see where they're at with this content, and to also, like, just to get them to think about these things. Because, you know, you hear a lot of things. So we're always bombarding them with messages, you know, be confident, take care of yourself, be yourself, you know, like all these phrases and these words. And after you hear them, they can become a bit cliche. So really getting them to think about, okay, like, what is it that we're actually talking about here today? And then that helps me move forward in, like, what I share or not share. The interesting thing about working with youth is, like, you know, you can make your assumptions on what you think they know and what they don't know, and they can totally surprise you. You can think, oh, they know all about this, and they could know nothing about it, and vice versa. So really just, like, seeing where they are with the content and then stepping in and providing my resources. So, for example, I did a workshop once on mixed race identity, and there is a document. It's called the Bill of Rights for People of Mixed Heritage. And it's just this one page of paper with a few lines, and it talks about things like, you know, as a mixed race person, I have the right to identify myself how I choose. I have the right to identify myself differently than my parents. I have the right to identify myself differently than my siblings. So it's just these little affirmations and things that, you know, they sound obvious. They sound like they make so much sense. But, you know, when we live in a world where you're constantly being told otherwise and others are defining you, whether on purpose or not on purpose, like, those messages can get lost. Right. So I try to introduce some sort of content that's really going to, like, affirm people. And then there's always some sort of activity we do, too. And this really depends on the audience. But thinking about when I visited my middle school and I was there, you know, really to talk about confidence building and self-love, I did this activity and I made everyone, you know, stand up and walk around who was able. And I had them talk to someone they didn't know, which is very easy to tell in middle school who knows each other and who doesn't, because, you know, they sit next to them and they talk the whole time. So I purposely had them, you know, talk to someone who they don't normally talk to. And they had to share three things about themselves that they loved. And a lot of people struggled with this, one, because it's awkward to, you know, talk about yourself. And also because, you know, talking to someone who's not in your, you know, friend circle or friend group like that can be weird. And so, you know, forcing them out of their comfort zone a bit, but then, you know, like supporting them afterwards and talking about that experience. And this was girls, all girls, and a lot of the girls, you know, they couldn't come up with anything on their list about themselves. And to me, that was, like, very alarming and striking. I'm like, oh, this is why I'm here. But, you know, I like to do something that's not just me talking at them, that really lets them get into an immersive experience, whether it's, like, a guided activity like that, or sometimes I'll give them activities that are really for, like, self-reflection. One time, and an example of an activity that I do, I have a self-care worksheet. And so outside of Iron Powers, I work at a university. I'm the assistant director for women and gender programs. And I was doing a program one time about self-care. And self-care is like a word, a term that we hear a lot in higher education.
Yes, we
because,
do.
You know, college is stressful. So it's like self-care, self-care, self-care. We talk about it a lot, but there's not a lot of exploring, like, what that really means and what that looks like. So I gave students this worksheet, this self-care worksheet, and it broke self-care down into three categories. One was physical, so like body, and then the others were mind and soul. And so I asked the students, write down in these three boxes, mind, body, and soul, what have you done in the past week for your self-care? And so I found this to be a very powerful experience because, again, a lot of people didn't write anything.
Right.
or they wrote things, or they're like, oh, well, I know for self-care I like to run, or I like to do this. And it's like, okay, but have you done that in the past week? And that's where they struggle. And the point in that is, you know, for me to really highlight the fact that self-care isn't just, you know, this every once in a while, like, oh, I'm going to get a manicure this month. No, that definitely can be part of it. It's part of mine. But also, like, emphasizing the point that self-care, you know, are these little decisions you make all the time, every day. And, you know, if we're only focusing on our body, you know, we may be working out 5 times a week for an hour, but, you know, what are you putting into your body? What are you eating? How are you feeling emotionally? Are you talking about your feelings? But, you know, things like that. So helping the students to view self-care as a holistic thing and also something that's continual. So I'm talking a lot. But yeah, like, those are just some examples of different activities. It's so how it really depends on who I'm talking to and what the point is. And then I try to wrap everything up by encouraging, like, a reflection on everything we've done, everything we've talked about, everything that was shared, and also thinking about how they're going to move forward. So, yeah, maybe I, you know, gave you all these jobs and you thought about all these cool things, right. But now what? Like, are you just going to leave and go home? Like, what are you going to do differently now that we've had this time together? So I always try to do something reflective and that, you know, really encourages them to share and to share out loud, like, how are you going to move forward as a result of this?
Your mantra is lifting as you climb. How have you used this to encourage others while supporting yourself?
Yes, that's such a great question. So lifting as you climb for me is all about sharing resources and sharing knowledges in the same ways that people have shared those things with me, or maybe sometimes in ways that they haven't been shared. So for example, just this week, actually, I was talking to a former student of mine. So I've worked at 2 universities at this point, and this was at a different university. And the student was sharing about how they're very discouraged because they had just applied into, like, a master's program, and they didn't get in. And so I shared about my own experience. Last year, I applied to some PhD programs, and I didn't get in. And so, again, it goes back to that storytelling. That can be really powerful in helping people realize that they're not alone. And also someone who they may view as like, oh, this person is so, you know, confident and everything comes easy to them, to show them, like, no, like, I too, you know, have problems and issues and you're not alone. And so that's much more of like the affirmation piece of it. Like, hey, you know, Me too. I'm sharing this, but then also like providing those resources. So, oh, well, can I look at your, you know, your personal statement in the future to maybe help you get in? Where did you apply? Which program did you apply to? So taking those steps to like really providing that support to see how you can change their outcome. And so, you know, like I continue to say, I work with a lot of college students and, you know, who will apply to different academic programs or run for these different positions and clubs. And, you know, well, do you want to practice your speech on me? Or when I was a student leader, I did this. Or have you talked to this Correct. Person? And so just like really sharing like that tangible knowledge, like whether that's let me walk you to the financial aid office or do you know about this tuition waiver? Or it's just sharing a part of my story for that emotional support. Like, hey, like me too. Like, look at me now. And like, this is going to be you. You're going to advance, but you know, all parts of the journey aren't as pretty, and just remind people that they're human and like everyone goes through that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know you kind of talked a little bit about kind of trends in lack of resources. If you think about health yeah. services, like you have all these teens that aren't willing to fill out a form about what self-care they have done in the past week. So how has your work influenced your views of like health within your community, within the U.S. as a whole? Like, what have you noticed about lack of services?
Yeah, that's such a good question. So when we talk about health, like, it concerns me how, like, we're not always talking about health holistically, you know? And usually when health comes up, I feel like people are thinking about physical health, which is obviously very important. But I still think there's so much work that needs to be done as it relates to, like, the negative stigmas around mental health.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, you know, like, it's just so important, and especially when we're thinking about, you know, people in historically marginalized groups, so, you know, girls and people of color and, you know, people who are part of the LGBT community, mental health is just so important, and it, you know, affects your physical health. Like, all of these things, they're hand in hand, they go together. And so I think what I've noticed is just, like, either a complete, like, erasure, like, that we're just not going to talk about mental health, or, you know, people who are working with youth aren't properly trained or prepared or like even aware like of the importance of mental health. And so I think like it's tough because so again, mental health. And then I also think about just like the cultural differences based on, you know, dominant cultures and things like that. So I guess a specific example, eating disorders. You know, we can think about the stereotypical anorexia affects, you know, young white middle school girls. Is that true? Sure. But, you know, there's other eating disorders, and people of color struggle with eating disorders, but it's something we don't talk about because, you know, we have different expectations of beauty, and, like, it's good to be curvy and all these things. And so when we ignore that, like, you know, eating disorders affect other people, that's very concerning because then we're not giving attention to people who may be affected by it. Also, boys and men, they have eating disorders, and that's something we don't talk about.
Yeah.
And so I think some of the biggest things that I've observed, like getting back to your question that I'm really trying to stay on in that ramble, is that just like the amount of cultural differences that aren't being acknowledged, and also like the mental health is just still like not addressed enough, I feel.
Correct.
Yeah, so I just want to know what your agency does to kind of help guide them through this hard time, you know, what kind of things you offer them. I know you talked a little bit about your resources, but I also know you offer writing support services. So what's kind yeah. of the importance of writing and access to those services for youth, as well as all the other services that you offer in helping them close that gap in their needs?
Yeah, such a great question. So I'll speak about the writing part first and then go back to like other resources and all that. So writing, is very important because it's how, you know, we communicate, how we express ourselves in this world. And there's just so much of an importance placed on writing and one's ability to, you know, write well and clearly. And that's like the grammar is correct, all that stuff. And because, you know, we're judged really harshly in society about our writing, which whether that's correct or not is another conversation, but, you know, the world we live in right now, like, writing matters. Writing is really important. You know, it's how you get into college. You have to write your college essay. If college is not for you and you want to start a business, you're going to have to write a proposal at some point. At some point, you know, someone is going to be judging you based on your writing.
Right.
And becoming a strong writer, that begins at an early age. And so I think, like, access to, you know, writing support and services, whether it's helping someone clean up their grammar, whether it's something I run into a lot, is a lot of people will write how they speak.
Cool.
And, you know, sometimes when we speak, we use slang or, you know, we don't speak in complete sentences, I'm like, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with the way we speak. But when we're writing, a lot of times it does have to be more formal. And so helping people, you know, transition from, okay, the way you speak is fine, but here's how we can communicate this in writing. Right. And so, like, helping that, helping to expand people's vocabulary, all those things are so important. And perhaps writing will be less important as, you know, technology evolves and, you know, I'm talking to y'all on a podcast and social media. But for now, like, the structure of our world, writing is really important, and I don't see that going away. And so, yeah, like, some of the services I provide, I'll look over students' personal statements for college or if they're applying for a scholarship. I really just help them bring their ideas to life in a way that's, like, more formal and in a way that just is more professional and polished. And I also, no one's taken me up on this yet, but I do offer, like, individualized, like, writing work support workshops. And so, you know, if anyone has a class where you're wanting to learn more about word choice or grammar and things like that, I'm happy to come in and do that. For now, it's usually a lot of people sending me things, and I, you know, help them fix that up, whether that's a phone conversation about how they can improve their writing or whether I'm going in and, you know, making the edits for them and, like, leaving comments. I do try to make it educational. Even when I am just editing something for someone, I leave them comments about, this is why I did this, and this is why I did this. So it's not just me fixing them, saving them. It's me giving them some help, but then also empowering you to, okay, this is how I can improve my writing in the future. So, yeah, writing, I just can't emphasize that enough. It's super important. And, you know, it's a way that we're judged. And if we're not strong writers, if our youth struggle with that, it is going to be a barrier for them. Whether or not that's fair, again, is another conversation. But, like, that's how it is. So I feel like the least we can do is help them out in that area. And then as far as it relates to, I think your question was about just, like, affirming people and helping them when they're going through tough times and things like that.
Yeah.
I try really hard to connect with participants, like, afterwards, like, in ways that are healthy. So, for example, I always will, like, stay after a presentation for a couple minutes to kind of see who hangs around. And inevitably, people will come up and say, this is what's going on in my home. This is what's going on in my family. This is what's going on with my child. And just really being there to listen to them and, like, really hear them. Sometimes that's all people need. It's just, like, someone who is actually, like, hearing them and listening to them. And so I try to do that. Beyond that, sometimes people need a lot more than that. And, like, you know, being honest about your limitations. You know, one time someone was asking me about, you know, resources for surgery as it related to having a trans child. And again, like, I'm not a medical health professional, but I can refer you to, like, these doctors who I know are trans friendly for your child. I can, you know, if you're, you know, if you need a book about, you know, raising a child who's, like, I can help you find those things. And so I take a lot of pride in, like, you know, being a connector and a referrer of resources, which is tough sometimes because, again, like, when I encourage other people to be honest about limitations, I'm talking to myself also, because, you know, if it were up to me, you know, I would just sit around all day and listen to people and help them. But, again, that's not, like, the structure of our society. And, you know, I do have a job that I have to go to during the day to make money, to make, you know, pay my bills and things like that. And so it's tough because a lot of people need help, but I feel encouraged because a lot of people also just need to be heard and need to be pointed in the direction where they can get more help. And that's something I can do. I can help refer you. I can, you know, find some answers and resources with you. So the way that I do that is really listening to them, like I said, and then based on what they're saying, helping connect them. And also taking the pressure off myself to, like, hey, my job in this agency isn't to help every single person achieve every goal they have, but it's to help them feel like they're supported, and, you know, like, they matter, and it's worth figuring out those things.
Yeah.
Ari, I want to talk about that navigation piece. I think it's a big thing for youth to have that navigator to resources, because that is something that is limited, and so a lot of youth don't know where to go to, you know, receive services, and sometimes that ends in suicide. And so in these past couple of weeks, we have seen some children commit suicide, not knowing the resources that you provide and are available, and that you navigate different children from all different walks of life to different services. I want to touch more on that writing piece. You might not know, but last year in October, you know, K-Life did a writing essay contest for 246 students participated.
Oh, that's great. I didn't know that.
And one of the barriers that we found was literacy, spelling, and writing. A lot of kids had so much information and knowledge that they wanted to put on paper, but there was that barrier to explaining their emotions and explaining to how they feel. And so what we noticed that there was a need of educational resources that needed to go in some of the schools in Kenosha. What is your thoughts on that, to how we can empower those youth that are struggling in those key areas of writing? And what can we do to support the schools and the students in those areas?
Oh, that's such a good question. I think it's super important to have students have opportunities to write for fun. And similar to reading, like, we hear a lot of people say, like, oh, I hate reading. But it's because they struggle with reading, you know. But when you can make something fun and relatable, like, that's a lot more fun. So I think helping students realize, like, the importance of writing and making it fun is super helpful. And also the piece I was talking about before, about, you know, a lot of times people will speak differently than they write. Right. And a lot of times when you're trying to help people become better writers, it can feel like to the student or, you know, to the child, like, the way you write is bad, it's wrong, this is the right way. And I just don't like that philosophy because it's not true, you know? We can communicate in many different ways, and again, like, especially culturally, you know, and as long as you're communicating and people understand you, like, that's what communication is. And so helping them realize that, you know, writing, it doesn't mean you have to abandon, you know, what feels true to you and, like, your language and the way you communicate. This is just another skill. This is just, like, something that's going to, like, help you out if you're able to communicate in this way. So helping them think about writing in a way that's not how you communicate is wrong, but, like, oh, here's a different way of communicating, and this way will help you get into college. This way will help you communicate with this group of people. Like, helping them really understand writing as an asset for them as opposed to something that, like, they're bad at or they're not good at or that's wrong. Because, again, there's nothing wrong with communicating how you've communicated, you know, your whole life and the ways that you've been taught by family. It's just a matter of, like, shifting, oh, well, this is, like, an academic form of writing, and here's how you can do this. And isn't it cool that you can communicate in all these different ways? So I think, like, just the way that we think about writing and that we frame it is, like, really, very important. And as far as, like, providing more support and stuff like that, that's hard because some of those things are out of our control. Like, I'm not sure how it is in Wisconsin, but, like, I think about some summer schools in Illinois, like, summer school for a lot of people is optional. So, if, you know, parents don't want to put people in summer school, or the kids don't want to go, you know, they don't have to. And we can't, you know, force people to do that. And sometimes those decisions are best for family, but just, yeah, so it's tough. So this is something that maybe I don't necessarily have an answer to, but I would love to be, you know, part of the solution and just shifting the way that we think about writing and how we help people improve writing. And I just think we need more people to care about writing.
I think that was a good way to put it. I like the way that you framed it, is more of being a part of the solution and helping to shift, you know, things in Kenosha to support that educational piece of writing. Because we had some students in that essay bunch that had impeccable writing, very young, some were fourth to eighth grade. And then you had that small percentage, probably like 10%, that struggled with expressing themselves. And you had to kind of pull it out of the writing what they were trying to say. And what we want is that in moving forward, that, like you said, if they can write effectively, they can apply for jobs, they can apply for college. So we want to focus on helping them eliminate those disparities and those social determinants of health. So I love the fact that you said be a part of that solution and help with the shift, because it lines up with that lifting as you climb. What advice would you give other individuals and community efforts working with you to improve youth health outcomes and further health equity? Because, you know, our podcast series is going to be about health equity. And what's next for you?
So for me, I could ramble forever, but I'll be concise and I'll say three things. So the first thing I think is just to listen. The second thing is to be yourself. And the third thing is to be honest. And so to elaborate a little bit, they sound self-explanatory, but I want to elaborate a bit. When I say listen, I feel like a lot of, you know, us who are in helping professions, whether it's, you know, in education or health, like whatever field you're in where you care about youth and their empowerment, we are typically pretty ambitious people who want to go in and solve the problems and do the things and be the helpers, and that's great, that's needed. But we also need to humble ourselves and really listen to the people we're serving. And so, you know, of course, we all have a level of expertise and knowledge and education, but, like, we can't ever forget, like, that the real experts on these populations are the actual people. So when, you know, we're going into these communities and we're working with people, we need to, like, really listen to them and what their needs and concerns are. And so that doesn't always mean, like, tell me what your needs are, because you might not get a great response to that.
Right.
But, you know, when you're conversing with people, like, being authentic and really hearing them, you know, what they're saying and listening. And so I think that is incredibly important, is to just truly listen to whoever you're aiming to, you know, serve and empower. And then being yourself is probably the easiest one, but you can help a lot more people by being authentic and genuine than by pretending to be what you think those people need. You know, whether you're trying to relate to someone and you think, oh, if I talk like this or I do like this, I'm going to be relatable. No, just do like yourself. Talk like yourself and let your authenticity and, you know, your skills and your experience, you know, that's going to help the person, because people know when someone is being fake, you know, when they're trying to do something they're not. You know, just be you and provide, you know, what you can, because we all have unique talents and skills and things to provide. And then when I say be honest, this is probably the toughest one for me, not because I'm dishonest, but when I say be honest, I mean, like, really being honest about, like, what the issues are, and also being honest about, like, your own limitations.
Correct.
So, again, like, people, like, you know, us in the helping profession, like, we want to help all the people and do all the things and solve everything, but that's just not possible because, you know, we're humans, we're flawed, and also, you know, thinking about resource and access and things like that. You know, like one time, I remember a person came up to me after a presentation that I did, and, you know, they had shared something, like, very deeply personal, like, you know, about their child. And while I have all these ideas of what I wanted to tell her, one, I'm not anyone's parent. I'm not a, you know, licensed mental health professional that has some soft skills, but, you know, that's not my area. And so it's like, you know, we want to help people, but realizing that, you know, we can't be everything for everyone. So being honest in that, like saying, here's what I can do, here's what my training is, here's how I can listen, here's how I can affirm you. But, you know, these people maybe at this healthcare facility are better suited to help you, or these are the resources. So accepting that sometimes, like, your role is just going to be to connect people and not necessarily do all of the things. And also, you know, I can think about times where I've given people my cell phone number and they'll call me at all hours of the night and text me, and they'll, at a point, that's not good for my mental health. So how can I help others if, you know, I can't even, right, like, set my own boundaries? And so really being honest about, like, what you can and you can't do. So, yeah, really listening, being yourself, and being honest are super important tips that I would recommend for anyone, you know, who's out there trying to make a difference. And then as far as what's next for me, I definitely want to bring more people into Area of Powers, because, you know, we need more facilitators, and I want to reach more people, and it's just super naive to think that I can do that by myself, because, again, getting back to that What Does You Climb, it really is that community mentality, so hoping to really just build my staff and just reach more people is what I'll be up to next, hopefully.
I really want to thank you for being a part of the Kenosha Life podcast today. I really would like to keep you on longer for an hour, but I want to definitely be mindful of your time. Under Kenosha Life, we are funded by the Wisconsin Partnership Program. Our convening agency is the Kenosha County Division of Health, and they represent and promote health and, you know, want to ensure access to health care for families and individuals. But I really want to thank you for taking that time, because one of our key pieces is youth empowerment. We're working on educating, informing, and empowering the community about their health right now. And you started it off teaching us that if we start with our youth, which is our future leaders, we can have a successful future. Julesie, is there anything that you wanted to add to that?
That I think you covered it. I mean, you really hit on everything, and we're so grateful to have you today. This was such a great conversation, and we really hope that it'll spark some more conversation out in the community.
Correct.
So thanks.
First of all, thank you all. This was so exciting. I really enjoyed my conversation with you, and I hope we can continue these conversations. And you all are doing such important work, so I feel equally as excited to be in the conversation with you. If people are interested in reading more about Aria Powers, go to ariempowers.com. I'm also on Facebook under Ari Empowers, so feel free to search me in that way.
Thank you again. Everyone, thank you for joining us for the Kenosha Life hashtag Take Action podcast. Stay tuned for more updates for our next health equity session. Have a wonderful day.